Horses with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, listening to Sirius XM online, and at the website, stevebick.com. If I sound a little out of breath, I think I just set a personal best for pre-show showering and dressing, because I've got to leave, you know, literally at the end of the show. I got another heart procedure thing today, so we literally got to get out of here at noon. So I at about 8:52, I said, "Oh my God, I haven't showered." So I jumped in, and I'm complete. You know what I didn't do? I didn't button down the collar. So I see that, like, you cost yourself precious seconds creating a new time record, record setting. Going to have a nice morning, actually, and it got a nice variety of conversations lined up that we're looking forward to. And, you know, a lot of times when you have the big two-day weekends, you get the Friday stuff. Day one on Monday, recapping today, the Preakness conversations, and both Chad Brown and Jose Ortiz will join us. We'll talk to Jose in this hour before he heads to the gym. You can't pump the neck and push that classic winner home without spending time in the gym. So Jose Ortiz this hour, as well as Chad Brown in hour two. Looking forward to visiting with both and getting their perspectives. I said yesterday, right? I was kidding about, you know, just go back to the cloud computing conversation. No, this is, it sure seemed, like I mentioned yesterday, it sure seemed like the team, well, you know, Chad and Seth Klarman, that they really were relishing this one more. And maybe it's simple as that suggestion that, you know, winning the first classic for Chad with cloud computing, maybe that was part of it. But they really looked like they really enjoyed, you know, not that they didn't enjoy cloud computing's win, but they certainly looked like they were enjoying this one even more. Mike Trombetta is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. He's at the sales grounds. We'll talk about the sale momentarily. I don't know if we're going to get a chance to talk to Nicole Russo. I don't know yet. We'll get Mike's impression of the sale. It sure looked to me. I watched about 2 hours. Middle afternoon yesterday, and I happened to catch the, it's just amazing, actually. I threw it on, and literally, I think the second hip through was the session topper and potentially sale topper. That's the $725,000 Gervin. Yeah, Donato Lanny for Michael Lund Peterson led everything, hip 88. Yeah, I think I tuned in. It was like hip 86 or 85. And 2 seconds later, I heard this thing, you know, have it in the background. And Gervin Philly that Paul Sharp consigned and had been a $90,000 July yearling last year. Big score. Bred by Brary Jones. Just unbelievable. This the Airdrie success consistent, just on and on. The sale numbers overall, the top colt, another Bolt Doro, New York bred, actually, Mark Tuthaker and Keith Grouper, bred, and this one purchased for Spendthrift and Frank Fletcher. $675,000. The numbers were basically on a level, I guess, with last year, which was a record sale. And it's interesting what is notable. Last year in that opening session, there was the $1.5 million seller, which in fact. The $1.5 million seller was, wasn't it? Who was the 3-year-old that we just? That 3-year-old, I think, came up. I'm trying to think of who it was now. But that opening session leader last year, $1.5 million, to only have had, to have no. Seven-figure sellers, and to basically have the same gross, they did $15.8 million last year. This was $15.7 million. That's pretty impressive. In fact, here on the sales summary, last year there were three sellers over $500,000. Five this year, so. Kind of spread it around. I talked to our friend Marty Shapiro. Marty said. That he had two that he was seriously interested in yesterday. He said the same theme that we've hit on all through the 2-year-old selling season has just been maintained, and that is that the ones that breeze best and the ones that that vet clean and present well and have attractive pages. They're just selling at premiums that, that makes making everybody dig deep. Unbelievable on that front. It's very tough to buy in this market. A few of the other notable hips. Let's go to the Colts for a second. We mentioned the Bolt Doro, Spendthrift, Frank Fletcher. And that'll be a rocket something or other. Rocket Bolt Rocket. And Into Mischief, the one out of Stormy Regatta, $600,000 to the Windstar conglomerate, Maverick Racing, Sienna Farm, and Commonwealth. Nick DeMerrick consigned. And Candy Meadows bred, $600,000 for that Into Mischief. The Always Dreaming, the nice... early score for Always Dreaming. Windstar bred, $550,000 colt that had been a $40,000 yearling at Keeneland. So there's another big pinhook score. Jacob West bought for the Lowe's. How about a Gunrunner, who's just red hot, obviously. Off his first crop, first classic winner on Saturday. He had a $525,000 purchase here. Pennsylvania bred, Blackstone bred, Gunrunner colt to Speedway, Nick DeMerrick. So nice day for Nick. And on the Philly side, who was the other? Nobody else over $500,000, but there was a Nyquist Philly that Harmish Racing purchased. Randy Miles consigned, $475,000 for the Nyquist out of Westside Tapstress, bred by Todd and Chad Frederick and Carl Potter. There you go. So there's some of the notables. And then looking around for some others. Bolt Doro, just Bolt Doro everywhere you look. Boy, Bolt Doro. How about a Ransom the Moon for $375,000? Yeah, unbelievable. $1,500 weanling in November of 20. And then a $55,000 yearling. Unbelievable. Pretty amazing. $375,000 Calumet bred, purchased by B4 Farms. So we'll probably go through more of this with Sid tomorrow. And I'm assuming the cardiology people said they don't expect, you know, knock on wood, that everything, they, you know, they do what they got to do. They're hoping that they don't have to keep me overnight. So, of course, that was true. That was true when I went in October. And they kept me overnight. Because, you know, there was a heart attack involved. You know, so, yeah, you stay a night. We got a bed just for you. So assuming I don't have to stay overnight tonight, when we talk to Sid tomorrow, we'll have the complete sale results. Maybe we'll. And I do want to get, I do want to get Nicole Russo in, because she did a lot of great work during Preakness and leading up and then coming out. So, it'd be fun to get Nicole with her Preakness, post-Preakness report. Couple of pieces of news, and let's get that out of the way. And before we reach for Mike, I got to keep this train on the track. We're going to talk. There's a chance we're going to talk today. In fact, next hour, to Amy Cook, the executive director of the Texas Racing Commission, because if you didn't see late last week on Friday, Cook sent a letter to Lisa Lazarus at HISA, and the Texas Racing Commission basically confronting HISA about what their role is going to specifically be. And of course, Texas, one of the states challenging HISA's legality. And this will be a very interesting potential test case, but essentially, and I can let Amy Cook discuss specifically what she, you know, what the concerns are, and it's laid out in the letter. If you didn't see the specifics, she asked HISA, please provide specific dates, races, and horses that the authority intends to regulate beginning July 1st through December 17th of this year, which is the racing calendar, essentially, for Texas. And then the most interesting part of this, under the Texas Racing Act, no parimutuel wagering is permitted for live or simulcast export for races our commission does not supervise. Accordingly, there will be no such parimutuel wagering or simulcast wagering in Texas on those dates which the authority asserts jurisdiction. So essentially saying that if you're going to be regulating as ISA's charges, it violates the Texas Racing Act, essentially. And so nobody will be able to bet on. That's what Amy Cook is saying. So we'll hear that specifically from Amy and see what else, you know, she can flesh out. This is also interesting. Occupational and business licensees who have an economic interest in the horse racing sport should be provided notice and an opportunity to be heard before you deprive them of this essential property interest. And then license requirements. You are advised to have all your personnel comply with the Texas Racing Commission licensing requirements. This is going to get right back to the state's rights issues and the whole constitutionality portion of the equation. That is involved with ICE's administration responsibilities. So we'll hear from Amy Cook and learn more, as they say. Let's get to Mike Trombetta first before we do anything, and we'll start to have some conversations. And I'm certainly excited, always happy when Trombetta does well. I thought that his decision here, we talked last week handicapping, we wondered, you know, aloud about, you know, putting Joe on the turf. And you know, then as soon as Joe won the Murphy, I said to myself, I didn't just say it to myself, I said it on Twitter. I said, now Mike's got the opportunity here to win with both of his three-year-olds, you know, the 1-2 finishers out of the Tessio, Joe and Mr. Jefferson. And Mr. Jefferson ran all right. He had a lot to do. And nobody, obviously, was beating Ethereal Road in the Sir Barton. But that was certainly a very productive gambit by Mike. And so I'm anxious to hear about, you know, what might be ahead for Joe. And, of course, I also mentioned, I think yesterday, in touching on some of the results, that Mike very cleverly got a nice win for Country Life. So, all right, Casey's. All right, go ahead, that's all right, Casey. You can try. You'll get him. While we wait for Mike, let me mention. You probably saw the piece from Dave Grenig about the New York Gaming Commission. Just bizarre and just a seeming unnecessary admonishment of Clocker Richie Gazer, trying to suspend him for 30 days and fining him $2,500 over the difference between a half-mile work and a 5/8 work. This is what the Gaming Commission is worried about. I just unbelievable. I mean, Richie Gazer has been in that stand his whole life, essentially his whole career. Just ridiculous, and he's going to fight it. And horsemen up and down. Up and down the shed rows in New York are in support of Gazer. It's just the thing is bizarre. They got so many bigger issues, and you're gonna worry about the way in which a 5 furlong versus 4 furlong. It's amazing. Mike Trombetta pulled off a pretty nice stunt, I thought, and you listened to him after Joe won the Tessio, and he said, no Preakness, and so we all kind of thought, well, Sir Barton then. No. He puts Joe on the turf, wins the Murphy, and then the perfect scenario would have had Mr. Jefferson winning the Sir Barton. Mike, congratulations.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning, and of course, for Stuart Grant, we got to include Stuart in this because you know, the horse named for the president and his friend, and certainly on a big day like this for Joe to win on Preakness Day, one of those high profile moments.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, we weren't sure exactly how it was going to go with the Pimlico turf course for him. You know, he didn't get a chance to breeze over it or anything like that. But, you know, his pedigree has a lot to do with some grass influence, so we figured now would be a great time to give it a try.
How long had that been in the back of your mind? Because I don't think it came up when you and I talked after the Tessio.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't really realize this, but the Sir Barton is for horses which haven't won a sweepstakes. So, you know, had the Sir Barton been an open race, it would have been a lot harder decision to make. But being he wasn't eligible for it anyway, and
there
we kind of had worked around the Preakness, there was only one logical spot to be considered, and that's what we did.
How about that? Well done. And it opens up, obviously, a world of opportunities. I mean, an 85 buyer out of it. And in a lot of ways, it was really one of the most exciting races of the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the NBC call back a couple of times, and it was an exciting race. I mean, you know, it was going either way there for a good 16th of a mile. You couldn't tell who the heck was going to win it.
Well, Ready to Perform with a seasonal debut for Brad Cox. That was the Kitten's Joy, and that was dueling with Florent Giroux. You know, very quietly, Victor Carrasco had a terrific weekend because, of course, he had won on Friday. He won the very one as well. And so, a weekend where a lot of the big names come in from New York and anywhere else, Victor held up for the local, for the local jocks room.
Yeah, but, our local riders did good this week. Javon Toledo did good. I think he won four or five races over the weekend, and I think Victor won four total over the weekend. He won a race for me, an allowance race for me on Friday as well. And, quite honestly, it's nice to see these guys get rewarded. You know, they put in a lot of work that most people don't see. I mean, Victor's available to breeze horses for me all week long wherever I need him. I mean, he goes to Fair Hill, he comes to Laurel, he'll do whatever I ask him.
Well, you come out of this, and we'll talk in a minute about Mr. Jefferson's effort, but, what's on your mind with Joe going forward?
You know, I really got with having to get through the weekend and everything and then right into the horse sales. I haven't given it a terribly deep dive, but I know Monmouth has a race at the end of June, and I know Delaware has one, I think, July 4th weekend or what have you. I guess that would be the Kent Stakes. So, there's a couple of turf options, but I would think being he run as good as he did on the turf, I'll be anxious to see what kind of numbers. I know we have a buyer number, but I'll be anxious to see how that stacks up, and we'll have to figure it all out.
Well, most notable of all is he's now 5-for-7. And, put a line through that maiden debut where, you got some experience into him and it was a turf sprint. And, he feels like that was just a race to get him going. And then since then, I mean, other than Shake 'Em Loose beating him in the private terms, he's perfect.
Yeah, he's been a good boy. I mean, and he tries really, really hard, which is, something that you just don't find every day. I mean, even whatever adversity you throw at him, he seems to fight his way on and try to get through it. And, that Shake 'Em Loose race, I mean, I guess we could have left him a little vulnerable because we set out a race. The idea was if, in fact, he was good enough to do something at Preakness time, meaning at that time where that was still potentially an option, we intentionally set out a race to give him a little break and a freshener to get ready for what we knew would be a hard two or three races. So, that might have left him in a position where he just wasn't quite his best on that day. And that's, sometimes that happens.
There's a whole bunch of things, actually, when you pick out his whole resume to this point. He's done a lot of different things, Mike. He's one-turned successfully, the mile and the 7/8 at Laurel. He's two-turned on the dirt successfully and winning out to a mile and an eighth. Now he's won at a mile on the grass, so he's versatile. He's won on the lead and near the lead, and he's won from off the pace.
Yes, he has, and, we all know that's hard to find when horses can do that.
It's exciting. He's he's a Maryland bred, so you got everything going forward here. And he's a declaration of war that Stuart bred himself out of the Archmare Battle Bridge. So Joe, one of the and also one of the really good calls. Dave Rodman had a great weekend. He was animated all weekend. Dave was super.
Dave's one of the very best. Everybody enjoys his race calling.
No doubt. Let's talk about Mr. Jefferson half an hour later in that Sir Barton. And you had to realize that the way that racetrack was playing, it didn't seem like horses that wanted to come from off the pace on the main track were faring very well. Ethereal Road actually did it, and like he was shot out of a cannon. Mr. Jefferson, I thought, was rallying well and you know, put a good effort in to get the placement.
That's exactly right. He always gives it a good effort when he can, and the speed bias was definitely, you know, not to our advantage that particular day. You know, we had him placed about as close as we could get him without just really putting him to a drive early. But, you know, that's part of it. You got to be able to adjust. And, you know, we were hoping for a little better, but we were pleased he hit the board.
Where do you stand with him? You know, he's running mid-80s buyers. Take a step
he's
back.
He's another one. I mean, well, I tell you, I think if he bounces out of this good, we have a few options with him, too. I took a quick look this morning. I wouldn't even rule out taking a stab at something like the Ohio Derby with him if he's training really good for it.
I like it. Very good. So a trip to Thistle Down. Well, the rest of the weekend, in addition to Joe and Mr. Jefferson, you also ran Spun Glass in the Very One. You had that nice allowance winner, that Comedy Town with Victor actually on Friday as well.
Yeah, we liked him. That was his first start as a gelding off the layoff, and honestly, I wasn't sure he was handy enough to get the 5/8, and he broke running, and I really liked what I saw out of him.
And I'm just looking, 11 to 1. I picked him third, 76 buyer. If you hadn't seen the
film. That horse cost me a lot of grief that weekend because about 10 different people asked me if I really had anything I liked, and I told them I really can't say because I'm just trying my best. And then when he paid $20-something, that put me in the grease for sure.
I love it. That's great. You also, of course, your timing is impeccable because hours before the party at Country Life Farm, you put the whole team in a good mood with the win from Mosler Safe.
Yeah, it's always good to win for the home team on that weekend. And that horse, I've been trying to get that horse on the grass, and inevitably Mother Nature intervenes every time, but he was good enough to get it done on the dirt.
Mike, let me get, speaking of the sale and Country Life, I think bought the second horse through the ring yesterday. And what's your impression so far? This is, you know, traditionally, this has been a sale that, you know, going back a number of years, you used to poach pretty successfully, and it was kind of a hidden secret at that time. It's not much of a secret anymore.
No, this is probably, you know, I don't know how all the numbers are going to shake out, but, you know, there's pretty darn good horses here, I think, overall. And I don't know whether some of them that didn't show up in Miami for whatever reason are showing up here or what have you. But I think all in all, there's some real nice horse flesh to be had.
Well, basically yesterday matching day one of the record sale a year ago. I didn't notice. Did you get anything yesterday?
Well, the Country Life horse was a pleasant surprise, and we were trying to sell a few that we had in, and we weren't quite as successful as we hoped to be. So I guess if we didn't sell them and we're putting them in training, that's kind of like a new face going in the barn. So we'll kick on with them from there.
I love it. And speaking of kicking on, before you go, let's get a glance at anything that might pay off. How about later today at Presque Isle? Extra Sexy Big Daddy in the 6th and Sweet Super Sweet for Mrs. Weber in the 7th.
Both of those horses have wanted that track. They like the surface. One of them's coming off a bit of a layoff, and the other one has only had the one race. So I would, my instincts are that both horses should run pretty well.
Then you come back at Presque tomorrow with another allowance opportunity, Cascade Park with Kaz Kimura. This is your Woodbine action paying off, because Kaz Kimura is. Are you partly responsible for him taking mounts and taking calls at Presque this so far this spring?
Partly responsible for that, and I love the enthusiasm that we get out of him, and he's a good rider and a hard finishing rider. So we'll give him some opportunities to try to get us some winners.
Speaking of winners, how about that first out winner, Moe's Perfect? Here's Country Life with a Mosler that is out of an active duty mare and was as I mentioned, at Laurel, and a maiden claimer, wins at First Asking, and might be okay.
Yeah, I actually ran a decent number first time out, and did it from the one hole, which is not easy to do. So we were real happy with that one, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that one's back in again on Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah, at Pimlico, yeah.
Yep.
All right. And let's see, you got is Victor? Is Victor? I think Victor's riding.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, you got Victor. That's in the 7th at Pimlico on Thursday. All right, Mike, get out there, buy yourself a couple more or sell a couple, and well done. And I'm looking forward to seeing you later this summer.
Thank you very much.
Mike Trombetta, everybody, and you follow Mike, Trombetta Mike, on Twitter. You can also follow Little Mike, the Trombetta that's on the trail to follow his father on the racetrack working for him. Mike Trombetta, one of our favorites, and that's looks like everybody that he's got this week. Those races today. Let's check. Case, I've got to send you Jose's number. Give me a second for that, because Jose Ortiz is going to join us next and talk about what was obviously a really a big moment for him. You could tell on Saturday how much it meant to him. So, looking forward to this conversation. There you go, Case. All right, you're in business. All right, while Casey raises Jose Ortiz, let's take a look at the odds. And I do have some of yesterday's results. By the way, that Presque Isle Stake, it scratched down to 5 horses yesterday. That was too bad. And there was no stopping under that scenario. There was no stopping Ravelli. He's a wrecking ball. Jareth Loveberry rode one-timer like a 1-5, a 1-2 shot should be ridden, and one-timer, an easy win, making the 3-year-old debut, the Trap Shot Gelding, Richie Raven, and the Patricia's Hope ownership went off by 6. Yeah. And that horse of Asmussen's, I thought was rallying and then kind of flattened out
on the turn.
But you had three horses come out of that race, so kind of compromised it. I think I've got Jose Ortiz with us, and Jose joins us on the heels of a fabulous weekend at Pimlico. The Preakness win on early voting for Chad Brown and Seth Klarman. Jose, congratulations.
Thank you. How are you guys?
Jose, I'm great, and you know, we had a couple of minutes in a winner's circle at Churchill 2 weeks ago, and Taylor and the kids, and you know, the way in which you've really approached these big days, it's to me really, you know, really notable. You had a tremendous trip. You worked out for simplification in the Derby. You obviously were committed to early voting, and you give him an absolutely perfect trip in the Preakness. Talk about the win.
Yeah, that win was big. I really like the horse, and that's
well, we work for every day. You know, we get up every day and try to find that big horse. To get the win, you know, is pretty amazing for me, my family, for Seth, for Chad, for everybody involved on the horse, and it's just amazing. We have a lot of fun.
And obviously, you were pretty emotional about and you know, minutes after the wire and when Donna Brothers confronted you on horseback out there. I thought that was a pretty touching moment, and it was obvious that, you know, you understood how big of a win this was for everybody involved.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, that's huge for everybody, and you know, to get it done is just an amazing feeling, very emotional, and I knew this horse could do it. He was working lights out, and you know, he was going to the race in the right way, and Chad was training him for that race. You know, everybody else is kind of just crumbling, you know, 2 weeks after the Derby, all the horses drew in late. My horse was training for this race since after the Wood Memorial, you know. So
sure,
he was ready 100%, and he proved it on Saturday. So we were very happy.
You know, you talk about the Wood, and you got caught late on with Mo Donegal. One of the things that Chad said going into Preakness was that you guys were confident that he did not need the lead, that he could settle and he could sit behind horses. Talk about, you know, the way in which the race unfolded once the gates open.
Yeah, we've been working him with a target just outside a horse, and that's, you know, we gave him the horse experience just in case this happened. And when we look at the race together, we knew Armagnac was going to go to the lead because, you know, he's always been on the lead, and that's the only way he can win the race. You know, I don't think he was good enough either way, and he was proved that he went with an easy lead, and he wasn't good enough anyway. But I thought that was his only shot going into the lead, but I still had to break aggressively and go forward and make him go forward. And that's what we did. We had a plan. We executed, and we executed at perfection. You know, he went to the lead, and we just sit right off it. And when it was time to go, I have enough horse to go whenever I wanted.
When you basically scoot forward maybe three, almost four lengths at the top of the stretch, he got out a little bit. But one of the things that you did, Jose, that was really, really savvy, you, at what point did you recognize that somebody was coming inside? And of course, you know, you probably had to think it was maybe the filly or Epicenter. I mean, how quickly did you realize who it was and where he was?
I knew the filly was going to come outside, because when I look back at the 3A pole, we was already riding outside. I didn't see Epicenter at any point of the race because he was so far back. Now that I see the replay again, and he was boarded up on a bunch of horses. But I saw the filly of the 3A pole, and that's when I start moving a little bit. And then I open up, I hit it left hand, I let it drift one or two past, just in case somebody come, like, be ready to engage him. And then I realized nobody was coming outside of me. So I look inside, and when I took a peek inside, I saw Epicenter. But, you know, I was clear. It was like 3-4 lengths.
Yeah.
But he was
yeah.
making a rally, you know. He was making a rally. And then I take my left rein and make my horse go in a little bit. And, you know, he went in, but I was clear. And, like, I think Epicenter ran a hell of a race. So, you know, either way, of their short rest. Not probably the best trip, but he showed up, and that means says a lot. He's a very nice horse, too.
No doubt. Did you talk to, did you have a chance to talk to Joel since then?
No, I thought we saw you on Sunday. No, he congratulated me, just normal. You know, I think he gave him a good ride, based on the consequences that he had at the beginning of the race. I mean, he got bumped a little, he got squeezed. And, you know, after that, like he said on the TVG interview, he said, you got to go to plan B. And he went, save all the ground, and came with a run. It doesn't work out like you want all the time, you know. For me, it did. That's what we planned. That's what we got. But, you know, it's 50-50. Most of the time, you don't get the perfect trip, like we call it. But he went to plan B, and I think he executed very well. I think Joel is an elite rider, and he proved it. He won the Crits Award last year, and he's been on the conversation for the last 10 years, I guess. You know, he's a very good rider, and I'm a big fan of him, and I think he did a hell of a job.
Well, you get your first Preakness, and you've got, of course, the Belmont win from a couple of years back with Taprit. The Derby, you've come close in the Derby. You continue to excel, Jose, on the biggest days, and that has not gone unnoticed. Not that anybody doesn't, you know, try it harder or you know, be focused for a big, you know, Saturday, but it sure feels like you outperform even the high expectations on the big Saturdays like this.
Well, I think at the end of the day, you got to ride the horses, and I thought I was on a pretty nice horses this weekend. Like I said, early voting, he was going into the race in unbelievable shape. He worked a week before the race, and I knew he was going to be tough if I get a right trip, because the horse was doing amazing. I just prepared myself, tried to go with a plan, and tried to execute it as much as I can, you know.
Yeah,
I think that's all you can do. You can prepare it, hope that it goes your way, and if not, you always need to have a plan B or use your sense, you know. That's a lot of stuff change when the gate opens. But the most important thing is to have the horse to do it, and I did have the horse.
Well, and you've had, just looking and just thinking about the last few weeks with Derby Day and Preakness Day, that win by technical analysis, obviously on the front end, and she was terrific. You go back to Derby Day and Jack Christopher in the Pat Day Mile, at Keeneland, Regal Glory and that Jenny Wiley obligatory. You had obligatory, right? That was a big win. Yeah. In the Derby
Letruska.
City distaff.
Letruska in Oakland. Yeah, I think we're sitting on pretty nice horses this year. So hopefully everybody stay healthy, and I think we could have a very, very big year at the end of the year. So hopefully they stay healthy, but I think we are on the right track.
Couple of things too about that, and we're going to talk to Chad later as well, Jose, and I'd love you to talk about Jimmy Riccio and you know, the work you guys do together, because it's obvious that you've got a perfect, you know, jockey agent relationship.
Yeah, I've been with Jimmy for 10 years, so he knows me pretty well. You know what I like, what I don't like. And I think that make it better, you know, when you got a relationship for this long and do well. So, I mean, we're just hoping to keep doing well and keep getting opportunities we're getting from everybody. And Jimmy is a very likable guy. Everybody likes him, and he does his job as well as anybody else. You know, he's very good. Like I say, we got a very long relationship, so hopefully we keep getting longer and longer, and, you know, until the end of my career, hopefully, and it's been an amazing job, you know. We find the right horses, we go out there, we work a lot, and we now babies are coming, so we're going to start getting a lot of babies. So we get up to Saratoga and try to find the next one, you know. That's what we do, try to find the next big horse.
Well, a lot of the big horses coming out of the Chad Brown barn, and I thought what Chad said about you, I'm going to bring it up with him later too, Jose. He had really a important thing to say when he cited how you accepted his decisions when it came to early voting and Zandon. And when he said, you know, I want you to stay with early voting, you said, absolutely, whatever you want. And you didn't, you know, there's a lot of ego sometimes involved in this stuff. And, you know, you obviously have a longer vision about things like this.
Yeah, you know, been riding for 10 years now, and I've seen a lot of things happen, not even with me, with other riders too. So, you know, I just tried to stay as calm as I can, and I knew Zandon was going to be very tough on the bluegrass. I really liked the horse, and I thought he could be a player on the Derby, big time. And he was. He ran a very good race on the Derby. He ran third. And Flying gave him an amazing ride both days. But on Louisiana, when I rode him there, he launched at the start, and I had to go to plan B, and he took a lot of dirt and make a wide move and came running to epicenter. So I really liked him that day. After that, I make no decisions. I let Chad do it, and he sent me to New York to ride early boarding, and I knew early boarding was a very nice horse, but before the wood, I knew he had to take, he need to take a big step up, which he did. That made me very happy when I after we run the wood, I was okay. You know, Zandon won the bluegrass, which I knew he would. Like I knew he was gonna be very tough there. But this horse took a big step forward, which I love, and I think going down the lane, maybe I'd be on a better horse. And you know, Zandon ran a hell of a race on the Derby, but he come a little short. And then early boarding won the Preakness. So at the end of the day, I got a triple crown race. But you know, Chad have a lot of horses. He have a lot of horses. So what I'm gonna do? Fight with him? I can't do that. I let him do his job. I do mine. Whatever he told me, that's what I'm gonna ride. I ride a lot of good horses for him. So the other guys too, Irad, Flavian, Manny's riding for him now. You know, he got a lot of horses. I know at the end of the day, I only can ride one. I couldn't be a Kina, I couldn't be a Aqueduct at the same day. So, and somebody was going to ride Zandon, or somebody else was going to ride early voting. So he picked, he make whatever make him happy, that's the best. He know his business, and he put me on. He sent me to the wood. I got on the plane and went to and came to the wood.
It obviously the long term result, very very positive. You know, we got to fold in one more person here. How about Tiny Tay B? How about Taylor? Watching her watch you is one of the real fun things on a big Saturday at Churchill, and then this weekend. You know, with all of them reaching for you, it's. You got a beautiful family you've created.
Thank you. Yeah, she's a big part of all my success. Helped me with my family, which is the most important thing to me. And she do all the work at the house with the kids, taking to school, so I don't have to worry about nothing. And that makes my life easier. But you know, she helped me too when I come home on the bad days. You know, she knows the game, and she knows it's gonna. Sometimes you get frustrated, but you know she's there for me all the time because she understands it. And you know, she just keep it, say, relax, just keep riding like you ride, and you are a great rider. You know, she gave me, kept me calm, and that I think it helped me a lot. Now I'm just 28, but I feel like mentally I have grown up so much in the last 5 years, and you know. She helped me a lot on that because she's a little older than me. And, you know, it just make me better. I'm more relaxed, more calm. I think everything I do, I think it over and over and over a lot of time before I do it. And, you know, it make you it help you to make good decisions at the end of the day when you think about it. Before you do it. Before I was very young, I just do things and, you know, it just, or say something that I don't have to say and it will hurt you, you know. Like in situations like Sandon or like that situation, I could say something to Chad, I could make him mad and then I don't ride either of the horses. But because I understand the game now and I'm just life, you know, you just have to let it play out, and you see how it played out in the long term. You know, early voting won the Preakness, so just better. She's a big part of my success. Huge.
Wow, it's nice to have, you know, to have everything that you've got right now, and you can tell how much you value it, and. It's why you've got such widespread respect among the horsemen, among the jocks in the room, and the horse players and the fans. Jose, it's really actually a pleasure to watch. You know how you've handled things, and you know you've already got one eclipse as. Champion rider, and there's going to be more. Certainly this year feels like you're you know on your way to a you know to another riding title eclipse potentially. I guess the most another important question though is how about those Mets? You've been out seeing your Mets at all?
Yeah, I'm a very good friend with Evan Diaz, and I've been out there watching him. You know, I followed the Mets even before he came, but now when he came to the Mets, man, I have to watch every game. And I have my kid, Derek, now he's 3, so he loves it, and he stayed up with me. When they play late, he stayed up, and, you know, we have a lot of fun. He's on that age that he wants to learn, and he wants to learn how to play baseball and stuff, so. We watch a lot, and he asks a lot of questions too. But I mean, back to the Mets. I think we have a very good team, and hopefully stay healthy.
Have they had you throw out a first pitch? Maybe when you won the Belmont, did you get to throw out the first pitch after that?
No.
All right, we're gonna get Pat McKenna to work on that.
Let's see. That would be fun.
Jose, congratulations. Continued success. Obviously, stay safe. Just a delight to have you on. We haven't talked in a long time, and I couldn't be happier to have you visit, and couldn't be happier for all your success.
Thank you, Steve.
You got it. Jose Ortiz, everybody, who you can follow, of course, on Twitter. You can follow both Jose and Tiny Tabby, the Ortizes. And what a terrific effort on early voting and everybody working together. Chad and Seth Klarman and the whole barn. And then Jose executing the way he did. So... He's I didn't really think about it until looking at this list, but he's on his way to a huge year. It looks like, I mean, so far in 22, that was his fifth grade one, fifth or sixth? Fifth or sixth? One, two, three. If you get this, maybe while we're on the table today, we'll get that eye checked. It says fourth grade one of the year. Early voting, Preakness, Apple Blossom, Latruska, obligatory in that Derby City distaff, and Regal Glory. Forgot about Regal Glory in the Jenny Wiley. But he also won, of course, the Fountain of Youth with Simplification, the Pat Day with Jack Christopher, the McDarmida with Temple. Maker has put him on a number of those type Maker-esque grade twos and such. Early voting won the Withers. Nostalgic won the Gazelle, and then a bunch of grade threes already, including technical analysis on Saturday, and he's got. He had Spenderella for Grand Motion, which, you know, she's, what, 3 for 3? So that's a nice, that's a nice situation, too. But I don't think he rode. No, he did not ride Spenderella in the Appalachian. It was Tyler Gaffleon. So I guess that one might be a little up in the air. Did he ride her? He did break the maiden. So he's ridden Spenderella for two of her three wins. And you know, could potentially head to well, I'm sure if Graham asks, he'll go wherever if she goes to Royal Ascot. Jose Ortiz. And, you know, his record, you know, when you think about, and I was kind of trying to get him to, I was trying to egg him on about, you know, the big days. And obviously, having horses, having a couple of mounts every big weekend for, you know, for the kinds of horses that Chad sends out. But one thing's notable that when you look at this list, actually, and that is short, long, turf, dirt. I think earlier in his career, he was thought of a little bit as a front end. You know, he was more the front end guy, and Irad was more the off the pace guy. So, he's completely as well-rounded, and that was really nice what he said about Taylor and what she's helped do. I mean, for him and his makeup, really nice. Jose Ortiz, I was looking forward to that. Looking forward to a visit as well with Chad Brown in about 40 minutes. Right now, though, let's take the break here. Tim Layden is going to join us now, and we'll talk to Amy Cook, I think, at 11:30, all right, from the Texas Racing Commission. So let's break here. Hour two, Chad Brown later this hour, and Tim Layden next from NBC Sports.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo STEVE200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills, are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a